I have a target tonight for who this subject is specifically for. For all you guys in the church who are under 30 years old and not married. Well, let's just say any of you guys who are still single. Otherwise, we accept Dan from it. Is there anyone else here who's over 30 that's not married? I forget ages. I'm sorry. I forget. I don't know ages. Just forget that whole thing, okay? This is especially for the guys here tonight who have many, many life decisions ahead of them. Maybe some more than others. You girls can listen. All the things that are true about guys here are also true about girls, but guys have a specific place in maintaining and leading, creating order in family, church. Those are the two things that really God has put men in charge of in his order for his people. Does anybody, as a young man, feel the need to excel in life? Yeah, you want to excel. The Bible gives us one specific thing that will prevent you from ever excelling. Now, there's lots of reasons that a person might not excel, but specifically, there's one thing mentioned in the scriptures that says you will not excel because of this. Does anyone know what it is? Instability. You got it. And that's in Genesis chapter 49. Jacob called unto his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Gather yourselves together and hearken, and hear rather, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water thou shalt not excel. Because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it. He went up to my couch." Jacob is dying. He's at the end of his life. And through the Spirit of God, we know that Jacob did this through the Spirit of God because it's recorded here in the scriptures as truth. Through the Spirit of God, Jacob called his sons around him and said he was going to tell them what was going to befall them in the last days. In other words, I'm going to predict the outcome of your lives. Reuben. We're only going to talk tonight about Reuben. He says, "Reuben, thou art my firstborn." The first son that Jacob had. For some reason, intelligence oftentimes seems to bless first kids more than others. I don't like that idea because I'm not a first kid, but I have seen it over and over and over again. It almost seems like the oldest kid is the most intelligent in every family. Take that or leave it. The Bible doesn't say that. But he says about Reuben, "Thou art my firstborn, my might, the beginning of my strength." Reuben had two things going for him that every man would love to have. Next phrase is the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Now, come on here. We're talking about men. We're talking about men excelling. Now, Reuben had it, right? He excelled in dignity and power. That's what it says. He had the excellency of dignity and of power. So it sounds like he's got things made for him. He is a man of worth. He's the beginning of the might of Jacob. But no, in the latter days, in the last days, he says, you're unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. Now, we know very, very, very little about Reuben's life. But one thing that we do know about him that puts him in a very high regard, he was the one brother that didn't want to kill Joseph. When Joseph came from his father to see the brethren, his brethren in the wilderness feeding the sheep and to get a report of how things were going with them, and his brothers hated him and couldn't speak peaceably to him. And then when they saw him coming, they said, hey, here he comes. Let's kill him. And Reuben said, no, don't do it. Let's cast him into a pit instead. And Reuben intended to go back to that pit and get him out later and deliver him from his father. Now, Reuben compromised when he did that. Okay, that was a compromise. Reuben should have stand up and said, you will not touch him or I'll die with him. That's what Reuben should have done. But he made a compromise. He pleased both his brothers and was intending to please his father also. As the story goes, the brothers then pulled him up and sold him when Reuben was not there. And Reuben comes back to the pit later to get him out, and he's not there. So Reuben was not like the rest of his brothers. He was better than his brothers to some degree because he refused to kill Joseph or allow them to. But then, oddly, in chapter 35 of Genesis, when Jacob has left Laban's place and is heading back to his father's land, back to Isaac, Reuben takes one of his dad's wives and lays with her. And this is what Jacob brings up against him right here. He says, you went up to thy father's bed and defilest it. Now, what makes a man that's the beginning of Jacob's might, the beginning of his strength? He's got the excellency of dignity and of power. What makes him do something that horrible? The passage told us he was unstable. You see, he was committed to right, but he wasn't committed in the form of a rock. He was committed in the form of water. That's how he was unstable. He was unstable as water. Now let's talk about water for a little bit to find out exactly what it means to be as unstable as water. First of all, have you guys ever built a tower out of water? What happens to water when you have a certain amount of it? It don't matter if it's a glass full or if it is an ocean full. And you take it and pour it out of the container that it's in, what happens to it? What's that? It spreads out. What determines the shape that it's going to take? Whatever it... It goes... Its path is dictated by something besides itself. That's what water does. The things around it decide where it is going to go, what it's going to do. And Reuben was a guy who had everything going for him, but he let somebody else make his choices in life. That's what he had here when he was unstable as water. He let the world around him influence him as to who he was going to be. Now, if you've ever listened to Curtis Hudson preach, he talks about this crooked river scenario in some of his sermons. And if you would ever get up in an airplane and fly above a river, you can see that the river goes this way and that way. And how many times do you cross the Wisconsin River on the way from here to Madison? Someone tell me why the rivers don't follow the road. They were there first. Why don't the roads follow the river? They were too crooked to follow. Why did the river choose the course that it chose? Well, it starts out wherever it starts, for whatever reason it starts, whether it's a spring or a lake or whatever, wherever the river decides to start from, wherever it is, where the water builds up to a place that it is no longer contained in the place that it is, it begins to run. That water will run this way until there's something higher there, and then it will turn. And it doesn't matter if it's almost backwards, where's the lowest direction, but that's the way it will turn. And it will turn, 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 and it will go wherever it needs, wherever it would like to go, it will go wherever is the easiest place for it to go, wherever is the path that is lowest out of least resistance. Sometimes it will stop and it will fill a very, very, very large pool and form another lake and then keep going. Rivers do that once in a while too, because there's a big spot there that it has to climb up to a certain level before it can flow over the next place. And if you were to measure the Wisconsin River, you would probably find out that it wasted hundreds of miles getting from point A to point B. Now, that's not very efficient. In the scenario of a river, it's very good because it provides water in many places. We like rivers to do that. It's actually helpful for the earth that rivers do that. But when we start comparing water to a human being, God says, don't be like water. Okay, Curtis Hudson says, if you choose the path of least resistance, your life will be as crooked as a river. And I have seen many Christians who have lived just exactly that way. They set out to serve God, and as they go about their daily business, they come to a roadblock. Now, the goal's ahead. They're here, the goal's ahead. The roadblock is between them and the goal. What do you do in that situation? Well, you're going to have two choices. You're going to have two things that you can choose to do at that point. And those two things are to remove the roadblock or get over it or some way get through it. That's one choice. The other choice is to change your course. Now, of course, I'm here. The goal's there. What does it matter if I go 100 miles out of the way if I come back to the path and continue on? What does it matter? Does it matter? Now, in most Christian thinking, it doesn't matter. But I'm going to tell you tonight why it does matter. Why it matters is the simple idea of, do we pursue truth? Do we pursue life based on truth? Or do we pursue life based on the consequences that come from our actions? That's our basic two ideas. If you tell a person to get from here to Los Angeles, they can call up a taxi cab and take a taxi. They could walk out the door and they could walk. They could get on a plane and fly around the world. They could get on a plane and fly straight there. They could go down to the Gulf of Mexico and take a boat around South America. there's numerous things that a person could do to get between Rhinelander and Los Angeles, okay? Who dictates which is the right way to do it? Okay. Who's in charge of the trip? Say, I'm in charge of the trip because it's my employee and I'm paying them to get there. Then I say, I want you to get there based on this criteria. I want this kind of expense and this kind of time put out to get there. And that's what they do. But let's say they're in charge of the trip. Does it matter if they get on a boat and head around South America? Now, to most Christians, the ideal for how to determine how to get between Rhinelander and Los Angeles is what is going to provide me the most convenience, the easiest, the cheapest, etc., etc. Something that is consequential, something that is going to do the most for me is the thing that makes my decision. Okay? If you're in charge of the trip from Rhinelander to Los Angeles, that's acceptable. There's no such thing as truth. But if God is in charge of that trip, and God says, this is the way to do it, and you do it that way, or you don't do it that way, we now have a path marked, a commandment given from the person who's in charge, and any deviation from that becomes wrong. Okay, so we're here, the goal's there, there's a roadblock here. We go to determine whether or not we can go 100 miles out of the path to go around this roadblock. We go to the scriptures at this point to determine if it is right or wrong to leave the path to get around this roadblock. Okay? God is the one who made us. Not only did he made us and therefore owned us, but he has since bought us. Okay? He owns us twice. We are his, we belong to him, and he absolutely has the authority over our life to set rules for us. Some people argue in Christian circles about whether or not there is such a thing as truth. Some people say your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth. Everybody, truth is different depending on who you are. If human beings evolved and we can set our own rules, I might agree with those people that there's no such thing as truth. But if God says the word truth in the Bible, that means the word truth is a real word. And God uses the word truth. In fact, Jesus, when he came to earth, what does the Bible say? Came by Jesus Christ, grace and truth. If truth came by Jesus Christ, then there is such a thing as truth. And if truth came by Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ has been the same yesterday, today, and forever and ever and ever and ever, both sides of eternity, both sides of time, rather. If Jesus Christ brought truth, then truth is one. It doesn't change. No, truth is not different for you than it is for me. So God says, such and such is the way. Walk ye in it. And we say, well, the problem with that, God, is there's something in the path. Now, this is where people have gotten martyred in the history of the church, because there was a way that they could have walked that somebody would have forgiven them for the things they didn't like about them and let them live. But the people said, no, I will serve God, and lost their life in the process. This is the reason that John Bunyan spent years and years and years in prison. Because he said, no, I will do what the Bible says. And they came to him in prison and said, sign this paper that you won't preach anymore, and we'll let you go. And John Bunyan said, no, I will not sign the paper that I won't preach anymore. And so he stayed in jail. Now, John Bunyan, because he said, I will preach, suffered consequences from that. Now, If you come to the average Christian and say, if you preach the gospel, they're going to kill you or put you in prison, the average Christian at that moment will say, I will not preach the gospel. Why? Obvious reasons. I'm going to get in trouble for it. Is that a correct answer? Do we determine not to do what God told us to do because bad consequences might happen or will happen from it? And of course, the answer comes exactly back down. Is it God's path? And did God tell you to walk that path? There's no deviating from truth if it's God's truth. There's no deviating from the path if God put you in that path. So what do you do if you're in the path of the line of duty of what God tells you to do and you come to a roadblock that you can't go forward? What do you do? You know, there's probably not an answer to that question. Because many Christians have fought that out over many years of trouble and tears. Many times, the path ahead of a Christian's life looks as black as night. And the Christian stays on the path if they meet with death for it. The unstable person says roadblock and off to the side they go. But you know what? That person has got a problem because that person has no stability. It's like water. Can come to that roadblock and the roadblock, without that person making the decision, the roadblock will push them off the path. That means there has to be something off the path that pushes them back on for them to get on the path again. And actually, that's what happens that goes wrong. That person won't get back on the path. Because there isn't anything out there pushing you back onto the narrow way. There are things on the path that will help you get off. The devil's seeing to that. But the devil isn't out there putting blocks in the Christian's way so that water will turn back to the path. The path to heaven is a narrow path and it's an upward path. And water won't make it. Water only ever goes upward when something pushes it upward. When it's forced, it will go upward. When it does what it wants to do, it takes the path of least resistance. Now I want to describe that further. Because I want you to imagine something that's really scary about water. We live on the earth, and the earth has the laws of gravity. Okay, everything that has weight to it falls on this earth. Anything that can be weighed will fall to the ground if it's let loose. Basically, don't come and tell me there's something that doesn't, because I'm not a science teacher. Close the doors of this room, get a 5-gallon pail, pour it in the center of the room on the carpet, and come back 2 weeks later and find that water for me. Can anyone tell me where it will be? Anywhere else? How about the ceiling tiles? The coats hanging on the rack, the books on the shelf, permeating the air, soaked into the wood on the piano, curling the pages of the calendar hanging on the bulletin board. Why? How does the water get from the floor to permeating the entire room? That's something that is contained in the very nature of the stability of water. It has no stability. And forces from every single source, every single type of force plays on water, to do things with water that you would not ever even expect to see water do. And when you walk out into the fresh air and look up in the sky and see the clouds, you see water doing what we would think defies the laws of nature, hanging in the air. How did water get up there? It evaporates. It goes so small that actually, if you look at the little thermometer on the wall, it says there's 16% humidity in the room. Every breath that you breathe, you're taking water in with the air that you breathe. The water's in the air. How did the water get in the air? Water does not only spread almost seemingly infinitely until it comes to a barrier, but it also lifts and it fills a room and it fills the sky and it climbs. You can take a dry towel and stick the bottom into a 5-gallon pail of water and come back later and the whole towel's wet. How did the upper part of the towel get wet? Water isn't supposed to go up. The towel should be drying. The water should be going out of it, but no, the water has a higher goal in mind than the towel. It's climbing out of the pail, up the towel, and once it gets up the towel, it will be drawn out by the air, and it will then dry, and then the water in the pail will become empty as the water fills the room and goes further and further and further and further and further until you don't know where that water is. It has no stability. It has nothing that will contain it in one place for any time. It will take any avenue to do anything to get anywhere. That's water. And that's what Jacob says here to Reuben. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. Now in Isaiah chapter 57, we read, there's another passage on water. Verse 20 of Isaiah chapter 57 says, "But the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There's no peace, saith my God, to the wicked." Water, the sea in the Bible represents the wicked. Numerous times it is spoken of the wicked that they are like the sea. And here we have a picture of the wicked like a troubled sea. Now, how many of you guys know that when you look at the ocean and the waves are running to the shore and back, and to the shore and back, and to the shore and back. How many of you guys knew that the ocean did that of its own accord? Huh. I must be the only dumb one. You know, actually it doesn't. The only thing that you see all that action in the waves constantly, without ceasing, day and night, without rest, is being acted on. Now I tell you guys something. If you allow yourselves to be unstable, the devil has you under his thumb. And you know you're going to go a whole bunch of places in life you never dreamed you would go, because somebody else is going to take you there. The wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest. But what else does the Bible say about the wicked? Satan's got them in his prison. You know, the wicked, you would think, they make their own choices. I don't want to serve God because I find happiness in something else. I find happiness in the things that God says no about. Therefore, I don't want to serve God. You think the wicked make their own choices to go against God. And they may partially make their own choices. But you don't have to make but one choice and the devil will throw you in prison. In his own prison, he's got you from then on out. You You're going to have no rest for the rest of your life. Your life is then going to be ordered by the devil. The world around you is going to shape who you are. They're going to tell you who to be, and you're going to listen to it. Because when you're unstable like water, it's the forces around you that determine where you go. You aren't the one that determines anymore. I want to show you the opposite of somebody who was unstable as water. It's in Job chapter 13. Job was a man, a righteous man who served God. He didn't turn from the commandment or following God to the right hand or the left hand. He was a righteous man. He put God as an absolute, and he put God first in life. And no matter what, he was serving God. And something really, really bad happened to Job. He lost everything that he had. And three wonderful friends came to visit. And they sat for a long, long time, and he said, Job, you know God is judging you for what you are. You realize that God doesn't do this to good people. There's sin in your life. You need to repent of your sin, Job, because God is mad at you. And this is finally, after a number of conversations have taken place with these people, Job has something to say that is of infinite importance. It's in chapter 13, verse 14. He says, wherefore do I take my flesh in my teeth and put my life in my hand? Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. Now I want you to notice something about what Job says here. First of all, he says, the last part of the last verse that we read, I will maintain mine own ways before him. Doesn't that sound like a sinner? God, whatever you do to me, I'm going to still do what I'm doing. Sounds like an ungodly person. But you know what? The ungodly are much, much less like that than a true Christian actually is. Because the ungodly are like a sea with waves. Somebody else running their life. They're like water that is unstable, that just does what is convenient for it at the moment. Chooses the path that seems to be the right path for the right time. A Christian is actually the one who is not like that. And Job looks up to heaven and he says, God, I don't know what's going on, but if God slays me, I'm still going to trust him, but I am not going to change who I am. I am not going to change who I'm living. I'm not going to change what I believe. I'm not going to change what I'm doing. I'm not going to change the life I'm living. I am not going to change anything that I'm doing. If the very God of heaven comes down here and kills me, I'm not going to change it. How could Job make a statement like that? There was one reason he could make that statement. Because Job knew that he was not unstable. Job knew that he had ordered his life around God. Job knew that he was doing what God told him to do. Job had taken an absolute stand in life to be right, regardless of consequences, and he went so far with his stand to take the stand for right, regardless of consequences, that if the very God of heaven had come down and killed him, he wouldn't have changed from his stand. That will make a man prosper like Job prospered. Now let me tell you something else. It didn't keep Job from trouble. There is no magic key that exists on the face of the entire earth to make your life perfect for you. Neither following the devil will make your life perfect, nor following God will make your life perfect. If you follow the devil a little bit and God a lot, you won't make your life perfect. And if you get so holy that you won't even listen to anything that the world says and God is the only person that you care about or listen to, you're still going to have trouble in life. But you know what? The person who follows God orders their life by a book. And if someone comes and says, you should do this, they pick up the book and walk away. And if another person comes and says, well, then you should do that, they pick up the book and walk away. And if another person comes and says, well, then you should do the other thing, they pick up the book and walk away. And if the path becomes so clogged and so dark and so scary that they don't know how they can take another step forward, they pick up the book and keep walking. And if God meets them in the path with a gun or a knife, they pick up the book and keep walking. Because your life is ordered by a book. And you know what you're doing is what God said to do. And you're not changing. Nobody can influence you. Nobody can sway you. Nobody can move you. Because what you are doing is based on truth. And it doesn't matter if you die for truth. And it doesn't matter if your friends leave you. And it doesn't matter if you have a yucky life. And it doesn't matter if, and the ifs can go on and on and on and on and on until you can spell disaster with 1,000 letters. It doesn't matter what the ifs are. You still keep going because truth is my standard. And you know, any person who sets out in life to live by any other determination will be like Reuben, unstable as water. You know, even the world knows that stability is worth something. Now, they don't have the stability of a Christian because they aren't ordering their lives by the book. But they know that if you pursue one thing one day and another thing the next and a third thing the third day, you're not going anywhere in life. They know that if you don't commit to something and pursue it and make that your goal in life, you won't ever get there. Stability is a very valuable thing. But when it comes to the scriptures and the Christian life, it's not just valuable, but it's the only right thing. It's the only way to heaven. It's the only way to serve God. It's the thing that we base all the decisions in life about. And my dad, in his sermon on truth or consequences many years ago, just brings up this simple argument, talking to a person about whether or not you should be in debt or not. And the person says, well, but if I couldn't borrow money, then I couldn't have a house. You know, the question in a conversation like that is not at that moment whether or not the Bible says you should or shouldn't borrow money. That's a completely separate question, way beyond where that person is in life. Because the question that that person needs to face right then and there is, am I willing to do right if it costs me something? You see, we can read the Bible and find out if God says we should borrow money on a house or not. But what if He says we shouldn't? Then we can move into a cave. Well, what if we moved into a cave and there was nothing to eat? Then we would die. But we would die a Christian. If you don't have that commitment in your heart to the things that God tells you to do, if you don't have that commitment right now, you probably aren't a Christian. You probably need to get right with God. Because that's the essence of Christianity. We do not order our lives based on what is going to gain something for us. We order our lives based on what the ruler told us to do. And if a person would like to, I want to tell you one more thing. If a person would like to order his life based on the consequences of the choices you make, you might find that sometimes deviating from the law of God will gain you something very temporarily. But remember what Jacob said to Reuben. He said, unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. You know, the funny thing about people who choose to base their decisions in life on the consequences that are going to result from them rather than on what God tells them to do, they think that they are going to gain something by it. And God actually looks down from heaven and says, you're a fool. You're not going to gain by that. You're not going to excel because you're unstable. Now, some people will find that it will provide temporary benefits. I mean, for example, the martyrs could have saved their lives if they had compromised. That was something they could have gained. But where would they be now? The martyrs in the scriptures, in the New Testament, have been dead for 2,000 years. Where would they have been for the last 2,000 years? Would they have gained anything? If they had denied their Lord to save their life? Unstable as water. We don't want to be like water. We want to be like a rock. We want to be so strong that neither our Christian brothers, nor the ungodly people around us, nor our parents, nor our own personal flesh can influence us to turn away from what God tells us to do. Now, one more thing. Remember that many times in life you will make choices based on the consequences of your choice. But God gives many of those consequences to you. Like, if you sin, you will be judged for it. That's a good reason to quit sinning. Okay? There are also many things in life you might make a choice to work here instead of here, or to live here instead of here, when neither one of those choices are right or wrong, and the one allows you to serve God better. Not all choices are based on absolutes, because absolutes don't affect everything in your life. But we have to start as Christians with those absolutes. And we need to form the rock of the things that the lines we can never cross. Things that are always right. Things that I will do no matter what happens to me. Things that I will not do no matter what happens. Things that I will absolutely abide by, these rules. And then this is how I will live my life no matter what happens. No matter if I succeed or fail in life, I will do these things that God tells me to do. When you get all done with the I will nots and the I wills, you'll find a small handful of things that affect everyday matters of living left that there's no right and wrong about them. It does not matter if you eat hamburgers for supper or hot dogs, as long as they're organic hot dogs. If you're eating Oscar Mayer, I pity you. It doesn't matter if you marry a girl with brown hair or blonde hair. They're both going to be dumb. Don't worry. I'm just kidding, of course. But those things are going to be small matters. They're going to affect everyday matters of living. They're not going to be the things that build the core of who you are, what you're going to do with life, what kind of a person you're going to do, how you're going to serve God, where you're going to go to church, who's going to be your friends, the books you're going to read, etc., 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 etc. And those things must be based on absolutes that you are willing to die for. If you're going to be a stable person and you want to succeed in life, they must be based on absolutes. Job had faced the biggest disaster that any human being will ever face in life. You can't lose more than Job lost. He lost everything there was to lose. And he said, I'm going to keep on serving God even if God kills me. I'm not going to change the way I'm living, because the way I'm living is ordered by God's word. He says, I'm taking my life in my own hand. That's the verse before that one. He said, I'm going to take my life, my flesh and my teeth, but I'm taking my life in my own hands. Whatever comes to me, I'm going to keep living the way I'm living. And this he said when he had three friends standing there telling him, something's wrong in your life. Job knew better. Job knew nothing was wrong in his life. Job knew that God was not punishing him for sin because he had that strong of a commitment to do right with his life. And nothing had affected that commitment. Nothing so far as to the point when he lost everything in life, it didn't change the way he was going to live. He was still going to live the way he was living. We need to see that in Christianity. And we need to see some people stand up and take some stands for living and stand up for Jesus Christ and live the way the Bible tells them to live if they starve for it. But you know, the funny thing about it is Jesus says, take no thought for the morrow. He says, seek first the kingdom of God and God will then take care of you. And you know, Christians still seem to get this idea that if I serve God, there's going to be dire consequences from it. Has God ever failed his people? Never. Dale, what if he fails you tomorrow? What are you going to do? You can keep living for him. What else is there to do? You know, the fact of the matter is, sometime in life, every person that is sitting here, sometime in life is going to believe God has failed them. The devil whispers it in our ear on a daily basis, and our own hearts are in tune with that. We're going to believe that God has not kept his promise or that he has failed us. One time I prayed with all my might for something and I worked as hard as I could to build up my faith and I believed I was going to get an answer and I didn't. Now what? I just kept serving God. I didn't have really anywhere else to go. But you know, one thing I know about it was God didn't fail me. We won't always know why everything happens that does happen. But the one thing that we do know is that God doesn't fail us. And if you say, well, I'm going to seek first the kingdom of God, therefore I know he won't fail me, and then expect to have cupboards full of excess food and eat steak every night, you might wake up one morning and find out that there is no food in your cupboards, to say nothing about steak. And at that point, the person who is unstable as water gives up all Christian convictions and says, this isn't working. I got to move on with life. I pity those people. They think they're in control of their life and they think they're pursuing something that's going to get them forward. And what they don't know is that they are being sucked dry by every force around them and that their life is going to end in nothingness. So with that, we'll dismiss.